This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
In her debut novel, Kylie Reid tackles the subjects of race, social media, Black Lives Matter, misconception, misunderstanding, and all without casting judgment. Such a Fun Age was released on the last day of 2019, and I caught up with Kylie Reid in the middle of her book tour to talk about the novel. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. Do you have an elevator speech for Such a Fun Age?
I sure do. This book starts on a Saturday night in September, and Amira Tucker is a 25-year-old African-American babysitter who's having a fun night until her employer calls and says, can you please take the toddler out of our house? We had an emergency. Amira runs over. She grabs Briar, who's 3 years old. They're having a great time at a high-end grocery store. They're dancing and they're laughing until a customer and a security guard, upon seeing a Black woman with a white child, accuse her of kidnapping. Someone pulls out their phone. Amira's humiliated, and Briar's mom, Alex, sets out to right the night's wrongs. But unfortunately, it turns into a bit of a comedy of good intentions after that.
So I have a sample of the audiobook here, and we're going to listen to just about the first minute of it, which happens to be the first paragraph of Chapter 2, and then we can talk about it.
Great.
Between 2001 and 2004, Alix Chamberlain sent over 100 letters and received over $900 worth of merchandise. These free products included coffee beans, Luna bars, makeup samples, scented candles, putty to hang posters on the walls in her dorm room, magazine subscriptions, sunscreens, and face masks, all of which Alix shared with her roommates and other girls on her floor. While she majored in marketing and minored in finance, Alix did product reviews for a student newspaper during her sophomore and junior years at NYU. In her senior year, she quit the newspaper to become a beauty intern at a tiny publication, but she didn't stop sending letters. On thick, textured stationery and with dreamy cursive handwriting, Alix asked nicely for the things she wanted, and it became a rare occurrence when she didn't receive them.
So what's happening there?
This is where we start being introduced to Alix in Chapter 2, and we're learning about her career, which came about in kind of a fluid but surprised way. She has an interesting career where she has a platform that's feminist and geared towards women about taking things back to basics, and it extends into writing cover letters and resumes and often asking for things by means of a letter.
So we just heard a chapter told from Alix's perspective, and we get to see inside the heads of both Amira and Alix throughout the book. Talk to me about writing from those different perspectives.
I was really excited to show women that aren't too far away in age, but still in very different places in their lives. And my favorite thing, I think, to write with Alix and Amira was their view of Philadelphia. Alix is coming begrudgingly to Philadelphia as her husband has a job change and she's leaving her friends and her network of people in New York City. And so she's a bit lonely, first of all, but also she kind of sees Philadelphia as a little sister to New York and kind of thinks, you know, if it's not happening in New York, who cares? So which makes her a bit invisible in ways that aren't often good for her self-worth. And Amira, on the other hand, comes from a small town in Maryland, and she's so excited to be in Philadelphia. This is where she became an adult, and she's figuring out what she wants to do with her life. And both women intersect each other in this very interesting phase in their lives. And yeah, it was really interesting to write both of their perspectives.
And so I want to talk a little bit about another area in which they intersected. You said in an interview that the more you keep writing, the more you're interested in class dynamics and tiny microcultures. And so, you know, one area that Amira and Alix, their paths or their lives intersect is through a man named Kelly. And you wrote in a chapter from Alix's perspective, Kelly had a penchant for othering Black culture that had started in high school and continued to develop in adulthood. Talk to me a little bit about Kelly and what's going on with him.
Absolutely. I think first is, as I wrote both of these characters, I wrote both Alex and Amira in deep point of view. So Alex does believe that Kelly has a habit of fetishizing people, and those are her thoughts. Whether that's true or not, I really wanted to leave that up to the reader. Kelly is a young man from Allentown, Pennsylvania. He lives in Philadelphia. He works as a coder. He's tall. He's really cute. He has kind of a dad humor thing going on, and he meets Amira, and he's very intrigued by her. But I also wanted the reader to kind of be dating Kelly the way that Amira is. And when you're dating someone, you know, sometimes they nail it and say the perfect thing, and sometimes they really mess up. And you have to know, okay, do I want to ignore that? Should we keep dating? What is this going to be? And so I really enjoy when readers tell me, I had no idea what you want me to think about this person, because I think that's exactly what I want them to feel. Kelly's human, and sometimes he really nails it, and sometimes he messes up.
So after Alex crosses paths with Kelly in high school, she is a bit traumatized by something, and she changes her name, or at least the way she spells it and pronounces it, to Alix, is that right? It goes from A-L-E-X to A-L-I-X?
Yes, it does. The French way is what she changes it to in her later years. And, you know, as a writer, I think it's a strange thing. I love names, and I think a lot of other writers, that's kind of how they come into character. When I was little, I had a name book that I carried around with me when I was 8 or 9, just in case I got bored. I think names carry so much power and history, and often they carry pain. I'm all for a name change, but I also think it's really interesting why characters would do that.
Well, and it struck me that, you know, Alix would become upset when Amira would call Mr. Chamberlain Peter, but she would continue to call Alix Mrs. Chamberlain.
Right.
And it was a bit ironic, because if Alix hadn't changed her name to Alix, Amira might have learned how to pronounce it.
Right. She kind of set herself up to fail a little bit in that way, in a way that she didn't see coming. I'm very intrigued by the language that we often use to create boundaries. And I think Amira is doing that there a little bit as well. I think Alex is also trying to make Amira part of the family, and Amira, you know, calls her Mrs. Chamberlain, which sets up a bit of a boundary as well. But I also understand Amira wanting to keep work and wanting to keep home, you know, and her friends in a different area. But unfortunately for Alex, who's so lonely, she just wants her to call her by her name.
Talk to me a little bit about the title, Such a Fun Age, because, you know, part of me thinks, well, are you talking about Briar, or are you talking about Amira's age? You know, this coming of age almost where you're forced to come of age because of, you know, health insurance and jobbing and adulting and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everyone. I think you nailed it. Of course, you know, as when I was a babysitter and a nanny, it's hard to not hear that phrase. It's almost like commenting on the weather. It was always, oh, how old is she? Oh, she's 14 months. Oh, that's such a fun age. That's always the term that I heard from strangers at the park. So of course that was, you know, alluding to this toddler world. But exactly, Amira is at an age where all of her friends are getting jobs and starting to make the incomes that will impact how much they make for the rest of their lives. But Amira still feels like she's being very much left behind, and she has to figure out how she can get health coverage. And even Alex at 33, you know, she has this career behind her, but she feels like she's been set back by Philadelphia. And I think that she feels like she's being a little bit left behind. And even going even broader out, this book starts in 2015. And a lot of people like to romanticize where we were then, but I think it's important to remember that the Black Lives Matter movement came out of that era. And so, yeah, the age is referring to many different ages throughout.
Now, we heard a part of the audiobook from Chapter 2. Talk to me about that process. Did you have involvement with, you know, choosing the actor or actress, or, you know, how did that come about with the production of the audio?
I did. I was so pleased that they included me in that decision, and I listened to a few tapes, and Nicole Lewis, the actress who we chose, she was just such an easy yes. She was so wonderful, and she brought so much to every character, but she also had this it factor of doing what I try to do in my writing, which is not telling the reader who to root for or who's bad or who's good. She had such an honest portrayal of every character. So I was so thrilled to be able to choose her.
Now, this is a debut novel that began in a coffee shop in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and ended up being optioned for film and as a selection for Reese's Book Club. It's so easy for readers to think, oh, it's a debut novel. Look at what she achieved on her first try. But talk to me a little bit about that timeline, what a timeline for a debut novel looks like. I mean, how long from start to finish for this novel for you?
Yeah, I moved around a little bit before grad school. So I started it in New York City. I had a year in between where I was applying to grad school in Arkansas. So I maybe did about 100 pages in Arkansas. And then I took the novel to the Iowa Writers' Workshop where I completed it. So I think from start to finish, about 3 years, but the publication, you know, process takes such a long time. You sell it and then, you know, you still have 18 months to go of editing and everything else before it's out in the world. So it's a long process.
I was also going to ask you about your two of your professors at Iowa, Paul Harding and Jess Walter.
Oh, I love them and I'm happy to talk about them. Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about those two authors and how they helped you.
Yeah, absolutely. I took the novel workshop with Paul Harding in the spring of my first year. And I knew, you know, this is the one time that you can bring a huge context of work to one Paul Harding and two, 10 other students who are doing the same thing and get their feedback. So I workshopped about 240 pages of this novel in that class. And I had a wonderful experience. It was nice to see, you know, what scenes hooked them and what parts needed a lot more work. And I learned so much from Paul. Not every professor can really meet you where you're at with your work and say, okay, if this book was the best it could be, what would it look like? And he really did that. So that was really wonderful. And then I had Jess Walter in the fall of my second year. And by then I was working on the film adaptation. And Jess has experience with novels and film. And he was just the greatest partner in that for sure.
I don't think I realized that you were part of the film adaptation.
I am. I'll be executive producing, which is really exciting. I didn't want to give it up. And so thankfully, I have agents who really, you know, fought for me as well. And they fought for me to be a part of it and also for me to have people of color on the other side. And so I'm really thrilled that we ended up where we ended.
So I was going to ask about a little bit about social media, because you are on social media. But one of your characters really didn't have she didn't have any social media accounts. Was it difficult to like put yourself in that position, having social media now yourself?
It's an interesting one, as I do enjoy social media. At the same time, I do have a lot of friends and family who don't enjoy it, who don't participate in it. So I think that I've seen, you know, from every different angle. When I teach undergraduate workshops like I did at Iowa, I do this exercise where we talk about a character's surface wants and then their deeper wants. And I think about this with Amira in social media. On a surface level, you know, she doesn't have it. She doesn't really know how to work it. She just doesn't want, you know, she doesn't want to use it at this moment in her life, maybe later. But on a deeper level, I think that Amira wonders, you know, what would people think of her if they knew that she was babysitting for a living? And she doesn't feel super proud of the image of herself that she would put on social media. And so that affects her not wanting to have it.
I loved that you kind of left it up to me what I think about some of these characters.
That is my favorite thing. Yes, that is definitely a goal. And I think that there are scenes like, you know, when Alex is talking to her really good friend Tamara, and Tamara makes a bad comment about public schools. And Alex just says, ooh, that, I don't agree with that. Okay, I'm just going to pass on. And that's like the feeling that I want to give my readers. So I think that that's really accurate. You know, everyone's human, and sometimes they say things and think things that you don't know if that's an okay thing. And you kind of have to wrestle with it a little bit. So I love that you were wrestling with that, too. That's great.
That was Kylie Reed, author of the novel Such a Fun Age, which was published by G.P. Putnam Sons. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover more episodes at KMUW.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editor is Luann Stevens, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.